Welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. This is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and we are kicking off Tales from the Crypt Season 2, Episode 1, Dead Right. Earlier, or in the previous episode, where I did Season 1, Episode 6, I mentioned with Mike that it was only 13 episodes or 14 episodes in this one, and actually, it turns out this one has 18 episodes for this season. So it's going to be quite a ride for season two. It looks like it's going to be some fun and weird episodes coming up. But we're going to go ahead and talk about Dead Right today. This episode aired April 21st, 1990. The description on the package here that I have of the discs says, "For the money, honey, a gold digger marries a slob in hopes of gaining an inheritance." This one was pretty fun. I didn't really remember this one, but because it had been a while since I've seen it. But it's pretty good. It's fun. This one stars Demi Moore and Jeffrey Tambor. As you would know, Demi Moore was from Ghost and G.I. Jane and so many other movies. And she's pretty young here. This is 1990. I think she's in her 20s or so. Jeffrey Tambor, which is, he's from Transparent on TV and Arrested Development. But he doesn't quite look like himself in this one. I'll explain that in a little bit. But that's who's in it. And Natalja Nagulich, she plays the psychic in this episode, and she's from TV's Days of Our Lives and many other television shows. As always, John Kassir is the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. This episode was directed by Howard Deutsch. He also directed a previous episode, Only Sin Deep, as well as The Great Outdoors, and he directed Grumpier Old Men. So we'll go ahead and get started into this one. The Crypt Keeper is dressed up as a psychic, like a medium. He's got the little headband and a little crystal ball, and he's kind of talking in a little bit of an accent, telling about, the fortune and the future of the episode and everything like that. And again, it opens up, with the Tales from the Crypt EC Comics kind of picture here, and goes into the episode. So it starts out, Demi Moore plays a young woman whose name is Kathy. And she's kind of in a dead-end job, and, she says she's a secretary. It's about 1950. This episode actually is more of a period piece. It's 1950. She's on her lunch break. And so she's heading in, and there's this Hungarian psychic, Madame Vorna. And she, she kind of lives in a sleazy part of the town there. It looks like it's probably New York. And Kathy's going on her lunch break to go find out her fortune. Her coworker and friend had told her that this woman knows what she's talking about, and to go check it out to see how her future should be. So that's what she's doing. So she goes in, and Madame Vorna is hanging out. I like her place. She's very calm. I kind of like Madame Vorna. She's a very calm woman. She's got her, her garb on with her, kind of like a belly dancer, gypsy kind of look with like a head wrap. And she's got a cute little Jack Russell-y type dog named Trotsky. And they're hanging out, and she's just, hanging out, watering her plants, and Kathy comes in saying that she heard she could read the future, and so she's like, well, I don't believe this, but I'm on my lunch hour, so if we don't go over my lunch hour, I'll figure it out. And so, then it'll be fine. So Madame Vorna is like, well, the fee's $20 up front, so she gives her $20. They go over to talk about it, and, Kathy's like, do you use tarot cards, or what do you use? And she's like, no, I just feel your energy and your vibrations. And so, they kind of get to talking, and right away, Madame Vorna sees that she works as, a secretary, doesn't like her job, thought she'd be a lot farther than she is now. And at first, you're like, well, I mean, that could be anyone at this age, that she's in. But then Madame Vorna also says, all your life, you have wanted to marry into money.
All your life you have desired to marry well, to marry for money, but your chance never came. So you keep working and hoping to meet Mr. Right. Or should I say Mr. Rich?
And Kathy's like, yeah, you're fine. That's kind of correct. And Madame Vorna's like, well, today you're going to lose your job. And Kathy says, there's no way. My boss is out of town. I couldn't even get fired today if I wanted to. And Madame Vorna's like, well, you're going to, but that's okay, because you'll find another job by the end of the day. And Kathy's like, yeah, okay, sure, right, crazy person. So she's like, my lunch hour's almost up. I'm getting out of here. She says bye to Madame Vorna, and as she's leaving, It's almost like Trotsky is trying to warn her. He kind of like jumps up on her legs and is, you know, but she's like, oh, get away, you know, and so she leaves. Now, what the dog was warning her about, I don't know if there's really anything. I guess maybe like take my mom seriously. I don't know. So she goes back to her job from her lunch break and she gets in and, you know, she was like, that was a hoax, whatever. You know, her friend who worked with her was like, how'd it go? You know, and then she was like, she walks in to check in, clock in to work because it's 1950 and they still use like a punch clock. And she goes to punch in and she was like,
she went into this bizarro act and spotted out that Clayton was going to fire me today. I told her that asshole's not even in town.
Actually, Miss Finch, that asshole came back unexpectedly.
I'm sorry, Mr. Clayton.
So he came back unexpectedly. And he admits he's not mad about the whole being called an asshole. He's like, whatever, fine. But he also asks her, you know, she clocked in late. And she's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, our lunches are normally an hour. And she's like, yeah, I know. And she's like, you're 25 minutes late. And she looks up at the clock and it says 1:25 and she was supposed to be back at 1. And she's like, wait a minute. And she realizes it actually took longer than she thought. She thought she was going to be back at 1. But her clock, I guess, was fast like a half hour or something. So she gets fired. But she says, I'm not fired. I quit. You know, calls him a cheap bastard and everything like that. So now she's walking down the street from just getting fired. And as she's walking, probably thinking, like, how could this woman have been somewhat right, but we'll see. And as she's walking, a waitress is getting kicked out of a strip club. And the boss is like, you know what? For the strip club was like, you know what? I could get anyone to come be a waitress at this place. I'm sick of being with you. And so he calls out to Kathy. He's like, hey, you want a job? And Kathy's like, really? So she ends up getting a job. Just like Madame Vorna said. So now her whole career has changed. And she gets this job. And she immediately goes back to Madame Vorna. So she's like, okay. You know, I see what you did. Now I have this new job, so what else is in the future for me? And now Kathy, who, of course, it's Demi Moore, so she looks, you know, she's very cute. She's got the short hairstyle. I think this is around the time she did Ghost and things like that. So she's in a nice business suit. You don't really find out about being 1950 till the end, but, I mean, it really didn't. I guess the punch card could have gave me that away, but I didn't really notice until the end. So she's like, well, what else could be happening in my future? And Madame Vorna's like, well, there's a lot of new stuff coming up for you. I see a great deal of money coming into your life. And she's like, well, what do you mean? You know, come on. And so she says, eventually, you know, you're going to find this man, a large man in black, who's going to marry you. And he may not have money in the beginning, but he will come across some during the marriage, whether from a family member or some sort of business deal. And shortly after that, when he acquires the money, he will die a violent death. And that's what gets her kind of interested. She's like, oh, okay, well, that's more like it. I'd be a rich widow. You know, that sounds better. Because she's like, you know, wouldn't you marry for love? And Kathy's like, yeah, love's nice too, but I'd also like to have a yacht and diamonds. And she's like, okay, well, tell me more about this guy. And so she's like, you know, he's a large man. He's going to come to you and you're just going to have to go with it. And so now it's at the strip club that she works at. I guess this should have given me away because when I was watching it, I was thinking it was 1990. And when I was watching it, they announced the next dancer. And it said that she was like Miss North Carolina 1948. And I was like, oh my gosh, is she going to be like 60 years old getting on this stage? But it's not. So now that I think about it, it was only 2 years before. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. But yeah, at the time I was like, is this an older... I mean, that's fine, but I mean, like, okay. You know, everyone was real excited about it, so I was like, all right. So now she's being a waitress at the strip club. And it's fairly busy, you know, busy club and everything. And, you know, she's doing pretty good there. She's making, you know, decent money. And she's at the bar talking to the bartender there, the guy who hired her. And this man walks in as she's talking to the guy who hired her. And he is, I want to say, grotesque. And they really did a good job because it's Jeffrey Tambor and you can tell like in the face, but they really, I mean, he's wearing a fat suit that's fairly believable. Later they kind of do a little dance number and he's a little light on his feet so you can tell it's more fake. But like his face itself, they added all this like marks and scars to him and he has bad teeth and he just looks filthy. Like he would be like, he's just gross, you know? And I also like the way that now that she's seeing the psychic, her future is moving along so fast, you know? It's so weird. I mean, I guess because it's part of maybe you make that happen for you. But it's interesting that, like, as soon as she got this new job, and then now it's still getting the money, and I think it's only probably been a few weeks of her working here, and now this guy's coming along already, you know? Had she never gone to see Madame Vorna, what would have happened? So she sees the guy, and she's saying how gross he is to the bartender, and the bartender says, you know, that's one of our highest-paying customers, so we need to treat him nicely no matter what he looks like. And so she goes over to see what drink he wants, and even sounds gross. And he kind of notices her and thinks she's gorgeous, and he thinks they have some sort of connection. And he says, after this, I want to have a date with you after you get off work. And she's like, no, that's fine. I'll just go get your drink. No, thank you. I'm busy after work. But he keeps thinking they have this connection. Later, she's up watching, you know, out on her break, smoking a cigarette above the strip club, looking down. And he meets her up there. Probably took him a little bit to get up there. He was huffing and puffing. And he's still like, and in this way, it's kind of creepy because he's really like, I mean, he's really not, I don't know if he's just like, because of the fortune, he's more inclined to try to do this, but he seems like he's kind of really getting like almost a salty kind of, because he's just up by her and like leaning on her and, you know, saying he doesn't take no for an answer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I would have just like, get away from me. And so he's like, you know, I know you're not interested, but I really do think we have a connection. And he's like leaning on her. And then, you know, she starts to realize, oh my gosh, I think this is the guy that the psychic's talking about. It can't be him. Please don't let it be him. And she leaves and goes back to, she's running. She goes back to Madame Vorna like, no, not him. And this is one of my favorite parts because she comes running in and Madame Vorna is just like waiting and she's getting ready for bed and she's sitting on the couch with Trotsky and she's like in her nightgown and in a robe and she's got her hair up and she's putting her face cream and like lotions on and she's just like, oh hey, you know, like when she comes running in like, that's right, I'm Madame Vorna, you know, what's up? And so she's like, no, this, I met a guy, you can't tell me that he's gonna be the man I'm marrying. And Madame Vorna's like, oh no, you were rude to him, weren't you? And she's like, yeah, what, he's disgusting, I can't. And she's like, well, you know, you're going to have to. That's the large man that's supposed to, you know, get into that. And eventually, you know, eventually he will die a violent death and you'll acquire money. So you'll just have to hang in there. And she's like, I don't even know. I don't know if I can. And so the next day she's having lunch with her coworker and telling her everything that happened. And this part's kind of cool. Like, I don't think I've seen this yet in the series so far. They kind of do like a shot where like they talk about what could happen and in the background it's being reenacted as if that would happen, like as if that would be with, like you could see it, but they can't because they're just picturing it. So it's kind of cool. So like they're talking and she's like, I really don't think I could do the marriage. And she's like, he's so horrible. I wonder what it would be like if he dies. So her friend's like, well, did he say how he was going to die? And she's like, no.
Did she say how?
She didn't say exactly. Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's like a hit by a car, you know, like a hit and run driver comes along, smashes him, spreads him all along the road.
He is so big. I'm telling you, he's huge. It would take like a truck, a big old Mack truck, just to flatten him.
And then they show him like in the street getting hit by a car. Like they could have looked out the window and see it, but you can't really see it. And she's like, well, he could probably die from choking on like a big hunk of meat, like just eating a lot of dinner. And like, you know, they show him like getting hit by the truck and they show him eating all his meat and like choking on it at the table next to her. But you can't see, you know, it. So she's like reenacting it as if you could see it. And, you know, they have a laugh about it. And she's kind of like, I guess I could go along with that. I don't know. I'll try, I guess. And so now they're back at the strip club. And there's a lot of dancing and, you know, some pasties and tassels and things like that. And everyone's having fun. And so she's back at the strip club working. And Charlie, that's the name of the guy. She doesn't really know his name yet, but that's his name, is the large man. Comes in and he's kind of bugging her again. He makes sure to kind of touch her as he walks by. Like he's kind of, I mean, it's pretty creepy. She goes over to get his order again. And he immediately is like hitting on her, calling her baby. Are you busy? You want to go out? Come on, I'll take you to dinner and dancing. You're too busy for that. And she's like, she's thinking about it. And she's like, fine, I'll go with you. I need to know your name. And he's like, it's Charlie. So she's like, okay, fine, we will go. And so they go, they cuts to, they're at a movie. It looks like they're seeing like the Wolfman or something, like a 1950s version. because it would have been, you know, the time it came out, of the Wolfman. So they go to a movie first, and he's got two things of popcorn, and he's just scarfing it down, and she's sitting there next to him, like, trying not to pass out because she just can't handle it. You know, she's just like, ugh. And after that, they go to Chinese food, and they have all this food, and he's eating this whole thing, and she's eating, and he's making just bad jokes, and she's just, okay, whatever. And then afterwards, they go dancing. So I was like, well, he didn't keep his promise. I mean, they went to a movie, but they also went dinner and dancing. And he is kind of light on his feet, but I mean, he's also, he's not the best dancer. He keeps, like, stepping on her feet and stuff, but, he, you know, he's trying. And so then he goes to take her home after the date, and he goes to, like, she goes to, he's very aggressive, like, because she goes, I mean, that's not super aggressive, but it's kind of annoying. She goes to shut the door, like, okay, I had a good time, okay, bye. And she goes to shut the door, and he grabs her arm and, like, pulls her back out the door and goes to kiss her. And so she gives him, like, the lightest of kiss. She's just like, okay, whatever. And then he goes to leave, and she goes back into the house, or into her house or apartment, and he kind of looks through her kitchen window there in the beginning, and he just misses her run to the sink and throw up. So, like, had he stayed a few more minutes, he would have seen it, but, like, yeah, she literally couldn't, like, just one little peck on the mouth. Apparently he has really bad breath, she said. And so they go on a couple more dates, and then she's working at the club again. And this part's weird, too, because it's only been a few dates, and he kind of walks up to her and says how much he's crazy about her, and that things have been going pretty well, and he may not have a lot of money right now, but he's got a couple good business prospects, and things are looking up, and he kind of does this weird marriage proposal at the strip club where she's working. Like, she's working right now, and he's just like, hey, I like you a lot, and I'm crazy about you, and let's do this. And so she's like, well, do you have any, like, rich family members in case we were to ever fall low on money and we'd have to ask? And he's like, well, I do have this uncle, but I mean, I wouldn't really bother him for that. And she's like, well, we would hope that that wouldn't come to that, but, you know, she's like, okay, cool, he's got this uncle and he's got business prospects, let's do this. So she's like, fine, I will marry you. And he's super excited about it. He's, you know, he's like, oh my gosh. I mean, he really did hit the jackpot in, you know, his mind, but he was pretty pushy. And so they have the ceremony. And she looks terrified. I feel bad. She looks like she's almost got, like, tears in her eyes. And she's like, okay. And so it's the night, you know, the night after the wedding. And they're back at his seedy apartment. And there's, like, a red light blinking outside. I think they're, like, across from a cheap motel or in a cheap motel that he's living in. And he's ready to consummate the marriage. And she's in the other room, you know, stressed out. And he's like, come on. And he's playing some music on the record player. And she's in there smoking, like, trying to get a grip on herself. And I think this part's pretty good because she plays it really, she plays this whole being disgusted with him pretty good. Like, you can tell just him touching her makes her skin crawl. And he's totally like, oh, this is, you know, it's so great. So she lays down on the bed and he tries to kiss her and does all this stuff and kind of skips to them doing, like, a montage of, like, a dance scene, like a ballroom dance scene, like, with this great music. I think it's Cheek to Cheek is playing.
Heaven. I'm in heaven.
And it's like, this is what she wanted it to be kind of like. I mean, maybe not with him, but she was hoping, like, she's going off somewhere to kind of make it better, you know? And, but that's not how life is. So it cuts to about, you know, it goes through, like, a time thing of about 3 weeks. Or I'm sorry, not 3 weeks. It goes through a time thing of about 3 months. And it shows her cleaning. She's cleaning his trashy apartment. It's not super bad, but he's on the couch just eating and being lazy, watching TV, and she's cleaning. He's bossing her around. She's doing chores and making him all this food, and it's only been about 3 months. It's so bad that she's, you know, in between doing laundry, she's taking swigs of liquor. She is not happy. And, you know, and every couple nights or so that, you know, he wants to consummate again, and, you know, it's just driving her crazy. It's just wearing her down. You know, she just can't, she's just losing it, you know, she can't deal. So she's asking about the uncle, you know, it's been about 3 months, and she's like, well, have you heard from your uncle? And he's like, well, why would I hear from my uncle?
Have you heard from your uncle? You know, the rich one with the factory. Yeah.
Nah, why would I hear from him? He's out west with his family.
Family? God damn it, Charlie. Why didn't you tell me he had family?
What's the big deal?
Big deal? Are you nuts? Are you out of your fucking mind? Are you crazy? What's a big deal? It's only my goddamn fucking future, that's all.
If the uncle dies, they won't get it. The kids will. And she's like, oh, no. Like, she's, it's not working out the way she wants. It's not moving fast enough. She can't take it anymore. And so then she heads right back to Madame Vorna. And she's like, I have been with him 3 months with this slob and I can't take it anymore. Madame Vorna's in her house just doing exercises and eating snacks and the dog's hanging out. You know, she just completely just laid back. And she's like, so the honeymoon is over? I mean, like, already? And she's like, you know, that's it. I'm done with both of you. I'm not wasting my time. I'm wasting my money. I can't deal with it anymore. You're a phony. I don't want to be with him. It's disgusting. And so Madame Vorna's just sitting there calmly eating a bunch of, you know, some donuts and pastries. But she's like, you know, he will get money and then he will die. Vorna is right. And she's kind of got an evil grin on her face. She's like, Vorna's always right. And so now Kathy goes across the street to an automat where, like, you can get the food and auto machines, you know, that get put in there. And as she's getting one of, you know, a sandwich or something, the people from the store and a bunch of cameras and stuff come running over. And apparently at this automat, she is the 1 millionth customer. And because of that, she wins $1 million. And at first I'm like, this small cafe, this small automat is going to give her $1 million. Like, I was like, that's a lot. I mean, I don't think this place was that big. Like, and everyone's super excited for her. They want her name and she's, you know, in shock. She's like, oh my gosh, what? You know, and then they're like, well, what will your husband say when you tell him that, you know, you won this? And then she's like, oh, that's it. I'm getting out of here. Like, she doesn't want anything to do with him anymore. She gets $1 million and she is ready to leave him. So she's like, this is it. This is my ticket out of here. And so she goes out shopping and she comes home with some new outfits and she's looking sharp and she comes home and she starts packing up Charlie's stuff. Or no, she starts packing up her own stuff. And she's like, that's it. I'm leaving. Bye. And he's, you know, he's in the kitchen like, what are you talking about? And she's like, you know, he's making dinner and she's like, I'm done. I'm sick of being with you. I never wanted to be with you. You're disgusting. I can't take this. I'm leaving. And he's like, wait, what? And then he goes back in the kitchen and, you know, he's like, what? You can't leave. And he grabs a knife, grabs a butcher knife. And, you know, she's kind of like, I got all this money now and I don't need you. And he comes back over to her with a knife and he's like, you can't just walk out on me. And she's like, watch me. I don't love you. It's fine. I can leave. I don't even need the clothes that in that luggage, because he tries to take the luggage from her. And she's like, I can buy new clothes. I don't want that anyway. It's disgusting. And so, you know, he's starting to get really paranoid and he's saying like, don't you feel it? Don't you feel what we have? And she's like, no, I don't. Whoa. She sees the knife and she's like, put the knife down, Charlie, you know, put it down. Come on. And he puts it down and she's like, okay. And then he raises it up again and he just starts stabbing her and he's lost it because his eyes are wide and he's just constantly stabbing her.
Nobody can. If I can't have you, nobody can. If I can't have you, nobody can.
And so she dies. And so then it kind of cuts to her gravestone, and that's where you can see it's definitely 1950. She was 25 years old. It talks about, you know, like it's kind of like a guy announcing it, like from like a Snapped episode or like a Forensic Files. And he's talking about, you know, Kathy Marnow, that's her full name, died after her husband murdered her. You know, he may have inherited her money, even though that's what she was looking for. But now no one will get to use it because he ends up getting death row and is electrocuted. So now he's at the state penitentiary. He ate his last meal and they have him sitting down to get electrocuted. They close the blinds and they do it really quick and he's gone. So they are both dead. And it cuts to it being on a TV and Madame Vorna is watching it. And she's sitting there in her house seeing what happened and she gets a knock on her door and she says it's open. And it looks like it's Kathy's friend, her coworker, who I guess suggested Madame Vorna or someone did. And then when they found out that Madame Vorna was somewhat true, for some reason now, 3 months later, her friend's there too saying, I heard you can tell the future, which I'm kind of surprised considering her friend is dead that she's, unless she doesn't know, I don't know. She's like, oh, you heard correctly. It'll be $20 up front. And then it kind of ends the episode. So Madame Vorna's kind of got this smug little grin on her face. She knows what's up. You know, she may have known that he would come into some money. I mean, the violent death wasn't really... I mean, I guess getting electrocuted is pretty violent, but I don't think that's what she was thinking. But he did come into some money. It was from her whenever she got the money and he killed her. You know, Madame Vorna just didn't let that on. And maybe if she would have spent more time with her, maybe she would have, but I don't know. Probably not. But it looks like he didn't, he didn't get it from his uncle, but he did acquire it from Kathy. And so he got the fortune. By then she was dead, but then he died a violent death because he was committed for murder or convicted of murder. You know, just kind of that's how it plays out. So then that's the end of the episode. Cuts to the Crypt Keeper. Crypt Keeper, you're so punny. And the best Crypt Keeper pun is...
Poor Kathy. She did buy the big one. And that Charlie, what a cut up.
Oh, that's a good one. Get it? Cut up, because he stabbed her. And big one, because Charlie's big. Anyway, so that's the episode. I have a little bit of trivia here from IMDb. It was rumored that this role is based off of actual true life events. The other one I have here is the source of the story is listed as a Shock Suspense Stories number 6. It also features elements from the Vault of Horror number 25. Another unrelated story, also titled Dead Right, appeared in Tales from the Crypt number 37. That story was later adapted as Abracadaver in the following season. So in season 3, we'll hit Abracadaver. But that's basically it. So yeah, a lot of this episode was kind of taken from the comics and, you know, changed around and things like that and put in different stories. So the next episode will be season 2, episode 2. This one's called The Switch. So that will be the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Check the podcast out on Podbean, Podbay, iTunes, and now I'm on Stitcher. If you would rate, review, subscribe, you know, tell your friends, share it, and thanks again for listening.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating again.